Welcome back, listeners. My name is Jackson Vickery, and I am the host and producer of the JV Club podcast. Today, we spoke to the makeup department head for Killers of the Flower Moon. Where did this film sort of come across your desk at first?
Well, I was actually vacationing in, I'm from Switzerland. I'm based in LA, but I'm from Switzerland. So I was spending time with my family in Switzerland, and I got this call like at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is, you know, it's like Switzerland's 9 hours ahead of Los Angeles. And so I guess they thought like at the end of the their working day, which would be like 6 o'clock, we're going to give him a call. And so I'm at 3 o'clock, I get my phone rings and I'm sound asleep, and I wake up and it takes me a moment to realize what's going on. And funny enough that I even picked up the phone, you know, I hadn't put it on silent or on sleep mode. And there was this guy just blabbering away, I mean, from my understanding, and but then asked me, well, I'm just checking on your availability, it's a movie with Martin Scorsese. And then of course I was like right awake, and it had Leo and Bobby De Niro and Lily Gladstone in it, and you know, I'm a big fan. And so I said, hey, even if I wasn't available, I would definitely make myself available, you know, trust me. And yeah, and then 10 days later, I was in LA packing and, you know, researching and doing all the things that need to be done ahead of time.
Yeah. And I mean, talk to me about, your familiarity just with the subject matter in general, because I mean, obviously being from Switzerland, I mean, it might not be as present to you, but I'm just curious if you had heard sort of about the Osage and the Osage people, and this sort of events, a string of had happened.
You know, I have heard about the events before, a long time actually, before we started the movie, sort of in connection with the Tulsa massacre.
Mm.
And but you're right, being from Switzerland, of course, you have this idea of what this could be or what this is or what this means. So when I started researching, still in Europe, I researched the French fashion influence, the period, the 1920s period, with the, you know, makeup styles, colors, shapes and all that. But then, of course, once I got to Oklahoma, to Bartlesville, where our production office was located, we had indigenous consultants that were part of the crew and the company. And then, of course, we had extensive research access to that Marion Bauer, one of our producers, and she had been working on that project for, I think, 2 years at the time. You know, had all these folders and photos covering walls, and we could go through those books, and we had mug shots of all the people involved, and you know, from the front with the, you know, the side and everything, and of course all the characters in the movie.
Absolutely.
That was essential, because I had no idea, I mean, in yeah, what's really going on, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not something that, I mean, going to an American school, I mean, it's definitely not something that was on our sort of what they served us on a plate. So it has been sort of fascinating to when it was announced, to sort of, at least from my perspective, to sort of watch it unfold and then sort of do the background research of it, and then to actually see how it's portrayed. I mean, it's so beautiful, and I mean, tragic and all of those. Yeah. But I'm curious, this was your first project with Mr. Scorsese, correct?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I had never worked with him before. I think it was because of my cineastic background, the movies that I had worked on. I worked on a lot of period movies that were, you know, then first you do one that's period, and then you do one with period and horses, and then you do period horses and big backgrounds, you know, scenes. And but I wanted just to go quickly back to your question before that.
Yes.
That I was surprised or astonished that a lot of people in Oklahoma, where we were based in Bartlesville, had no idea. I mean, they were, you know, they knew that we were shooting a movie, but when we told them about the subject matter, what it was all about, I mean, they were dumbfounded and they had never heard about it. And this happened in their, basically in their front yard, you know, years ago, but like within, you know, those 100 years, history was, you know, gone.
So, yeah, whitewashed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible. I mean, I grew up and live in Texas, so there's a lot of stuff in Texas that sort of gets passed over us, for sure. But I'm curious what, I mean, obviously, Scorsese brings all of his components into the project extremely early on. And so you do have that time for proper research and everything like that. So I'm just curious what that collaboration was like with him in regards to your position.
Well, initially, and because we shot that in the heights of the pandemic, you know, everybody in the production office, nobody shared the production office. So everybody was in their own room. And nobody was ever, you know, stepping out into the other room to talk to that person. So everybody was talking on the phone or via Zoom or FaceTiming each other. And so the initial meetings I had with Marty Scorsese were over on Zoom and FaceTime.
Mm.
And he told me about the story. He told me about, you know, the subject matter, how really sensitive the subject matter is, and that we're shooting this whole thing in the Osage Nation area. And so, you know, he wanted it to be obviously believable, authentic as possible. So you really feel the pain in the people, and which is also was then became part of how my contribution to the movie to keep this really realistic looking. So, you know, and I keep saying like a no makeup look doesn't mean that there is no makeup involved, because it was a lot of a lot of makeup, and because of the nature of how we shot that movie, which was shot over a 6 month period. So we started like in March through September. But when we first started on the first days of shooting, you know, we all had to wear masks, goggles, face shields, and in the beginning, rubber gloves. And I said to production, I can't wear rubber gloves, but because of all, when I put on facial hair, or I mean, the glove would get just stuck in their faces. And also the nature of the movie, how it was shot. It was shot out of continuity. So we started, you know, like in the middle of the movie, and then you move on to like scene 89 and then back to scene number 2. And because it was only March or early April, everybody who was involved came into the trailer and said, you know, that the indigenous people saying, I mean, that's the first thing they said. I just, you know, I'm glad to be here to participate. I just want you to know ahead of time that in 3 months from now, I'm going to be at least like 3 shades darker. Mm. Whether or not I spend time in the sun. So that meant for continuity reasons, we had to, you know, so it wouldn't happen that somebody approaches a house door all tanned and then they enter, and when the door slams shut, which is then shot like or was shot ahead of time, when the door slams shut and they're totally pale, you know. So mm-hmm. In order to make that continuity happen, we then warmed up everybody by like a few shades. And once they got darker themselves, then we could pull back and, you know, continue the same looks, but with different products and sheerer, you know, sheerer materials.
Mm.
And so it was like a flawless look from throughout the whole movie, you know.
Mm. And something I find striking about the movie is just the communication that's done through, whether it's the sound or whether it's the cinematography or whether it's the editing. And I'm curious with the makeup, I mean, when it comes to what you're trying to communicate with the characters, and the characters are then trying to communicate to us, I'm curious what your main sort of main mission and goal was with this particular film.
Well, my main mission and goal was to actually tell the story through the makeup by being as authentic as I can possibly be. So you don't look at, you know, sometimes we watch a movie that it's a period movie and the makeup is very obvious and powdered and, like, you know, you have all the styles and perfect shapes and everything, but you're looking at makeup where I oftentimes think less is more. Mm. And less doesn't mean like less product, but less visible. And the more skin you feel, I think the more connected you are to people. So there's not this barrier basically, or this wall in between you and your opposite. So we really tried with, of course, in connection, communicating with hair and with costumes and everybody who was involved to achieve those looks.
Mm. And I think one example that I'd love to sort of just pick your brain on, I mean, in regards to the sisters in the film that are really sort of the main sort of group of individuals, I'm curious what subtleties you were able to take from sort of each of those to make them have their own, or give them their own life and give them their own persona per se.
Well, then you have Molly. So we did like we divided them in like or I did anyway, like a groups, like one, there was one part of the family which is the mom Lizzie, and then we have Minnie and Molly. These sisters, they're more the traditional Osage, you know, they're even though they were, you know, per capita the richest people in the world, they would wear maybe sort of French influenced fashion clothing. Some didn't, but those were the traditional ones that we kept as authentic and natural as possible. And then you have Anna, who is more, you know, outgoing. She's partying. She loves fashion. She loves clothing. And so then she was more the fashion-oriented one. But then we also had to take into consideration that during the summer, you know, the humidity was like, you know, 95 degrees. I mean, it was so humid and muggy, and the clothing, because they mixed the fashion with the traditional style. So they would wear maybe silk blouses and dresses and the little French, the pointy shoes and yet at the same time, they would wear woolen blankets. Or the man would wear woolen, three-piece woolen suits and a blanket on top of that. And it was still, I mean, it's like, you know, and they were just sweating like crazy. And we, of course, had to try to keep them dry without removing all the makeups that we had done just like an hour earlier on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, but besides the COVID of it all, I mean, that's obviously a challenge, but I'm curious for this particular project, what was an unexpected challenge for you?
An unexpected challenge?
Yeah.
What was unexpected was that we had a lot of people that came into our trailer that were, you know, they had an open call before we started shooting this movie. And this was before the pandemic, and then the pandemic happened. And so all the people who originally said yes to participate in the film, then they made sure that they still had the time and they all showed up and they were behind the camera. They became part of the team, the crew. Others were part of the BG background people, like a lot of town folks and things. And then some speaking parts, people who sat in our chairs in the makeup trailer, and they had direct family ties to that story. I mean, they would every day there would be tears, and it was highly emotional because they, you know, they come into the trailer and they start telling you that, you know, their grandmother's or grandfather's sister was murdered, decapitated, or, and so of course that affected our work as well. I mean, besides from the tragedy, you know, we had so many people to get through the chair, so you had to change your routine from where you start the makeup, so you could actually then would apply maybe the foundation first and keep the eyes to the very end, because you just knew that there are going to be tears in a couple of minutes, you know, and then so we could, you know, and everybody was very sensitive, and you know, I think we all supported each other to make these people feel good, because they did this for closure, to move on, to support the project, to draw attention to the subject matter. And so, you know, then at the end, once they told us their stories, then you could finish their makeup and get ready for the next person, and the same thing would happen again. And that was very unexpected, because I didn't, you know, I didn't think this would happen in the makeup trailer, you know.
And I mean, for you, what do you take away from this particular project?
You know, a lot of movies that I've worked on, they're based on a true story. And I think this was the true story, which was now a totally different, it's a totally different situation. And what I take away from it is that I think it was a very important movie to be done, to be shot, to tell the story, for the public to see. And I hope that it's, you know, it changes people's views on things, not just for the Osage Nation, but in general, how people interact with one another. And yeah, for me, it was definitely one of the most most profound project that I had worked on, was able to participate.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. This podcast was hosted and produced by yours truly, Jackson Vickery, but a very special thank you to Sterling Gavinsky for the theme music and to Carly Haney for the artwork. We will see you next time.